Tomorrow, our recently elected MHKs will consider who the next Chief Minister should be. On agenda tonight, Rob Collister, Laurie Hooper, Daphne Kane and Chris Thomas discuss, will tomorrow's vote in the House of Keys be decisive? What went wrong with the past government? And how do you fix it? Last Thursday, I caught up with seasoned politicians Rob Collister and Laurie Hooper. Yes, 5 years is all you need in the Keys now to be an experienced Manx politician. You'll enjoy this. A few sparks flying. Rob Collister, Laurie Hooper, both poll toppers. Great to be back in the House of Keys.
Yeah, absolutely. It was surprising, but quite nice to top the poll, actually.
Yeah, I think it was very similar. I think it was a good campaign. I think it's we've got a very difficult agenda ahead, and I think that came very clear from the doorsteps, from the canvassing. But yeah, very pleased to top the poll once again.
Certainly the biggest issue that politicians have to do at an early stage of the House of Keys, newly elected House of Keys, is decide who their Chief Minister is. And of course, we have two candidates who've declared, at least for the round that's taking place on Tuesday. Have we got any decisions yet amongst yourselves as to where you're going on this? Rob, I think you're more mind made up at this stage.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate to have two very strong candidates. Both candidates have all set alternative visions for the Isle of Man over the next 5 years. In 2016, I voted for Alf. I thought he was the right person for the job. I worked with Alf very closely during COVID, especially setting up the MIRA and the salary support schemes. I saw him, how he operated, how he listened to people. I've also taken on board the views of constituents, which is very clear at the moment that they seem to be swaying towards an Alf vote. So that's where my sort of vote is going to go on election day.
Certainly Manx Radio's opinion poll seems to be suggesting 60% of people would prefer if it wasn't Alf, 40% say that they would prefer if it was, so it's hardly a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, but I think it's everybody has a different candidate they may choose, and as I say, there's some very strong people being elected from all walks of life. These are the two that have stepped forward to say they want to be the next Chief Minister, and I personally think it will be 5 years of incredible, difficult decision making. We've got to bring the public with us, so we're looking for, you know, the qualities of a Chief Minister. We need a good listener and a negotiator, a good communicator, somebody who can build and manage relationships right across government and our community. Somebody who's decisive, somebody who can make the decisions that the island needs, but also somebody who has a firm understanding of the Isle of Man and the people of our islands and our communities.
And Laurie, Ramsay needs another Chief Minister?
I don't see that it could hurt the North, actually. I think both candidates coming from the northern end of the island is probably a good thing from my perspective. So hopefully it means that whichever one of them is elected will have a bit more of a focus on the North and less of a keen desire to centralise everything in Douglas. So that could always be quite nice. It's the question as to whether or not you lose a bit of a constituency MHK when they become a Chief Minister has come up a few times, I think, and it's definitely something worth thinking about. Is that what you really want for your constituency? But actually, I think, like Rob's just said, both of them are pretty strong candidates, and it's just where we end up is where we end up, I suppose. I'm not getting a particularly strong feeling from Tim Ward members at the moment that this is going to be a decisive vote one way or the other, but I've been wrong before.
Yeah, and of course, I should say about the Manx Radio poll, it's 40% in favour of Alf at the moment, 30% in favour of Alex, and just about 30% would prefer someone else to stand. Neither of you fancy it yourselves?
No, I've asked that question before the election, actually. There was an article in the newspaper suggesting it, but I think, like I said, on the doorstep, it's not a job I'm particularly looking for right now. If there isn't a decision on Tuesday, I suppose that's something else that comes back into the mix, but from my perspective, I would much rather elect someone who really does want the job the first time round and see where we end up from there, I suppose.
And Rob, I mean, you're a man of forthright, visionary views and principles. You wouldn't fancy leading the country.
Yeah, but again, I also genuinely believe in taking the right steps at the right time, and it's not right for me to even consider that position. I think I personally would like to get to the next level of being a minister, to try and drive policy, drive the changes that I feel the island needs in a small area, and to see what the role entails. Because, as I say, I think we are heading through a very difficult period. It needs not just the right leader at the top, but it also needs a coherent sort of council of ministers, one that actually takes the public with them, one that actually really thrashes out some of these very difficult decisions. And one of those first decisions is going to be something as like Manx Gas. You clearly can see that the public do not want a 27.5% increase on gas prices, which could be the maximum that has applied. But the council of ministers, whoever they are going to have to navigate through this. Timble members are going to have to navigate the way through it. So these are just this one challenge we're going to have to overcome over the next 5 years. For me, it's the time's not right, maybe in the future, but that's up to the constituents as well.
Do you need to have experience of ministerial government? Do you actually have needed to be a minister to be able to provide the leadership that we need? Laurie?
I don't think so, actually. It's more about the kind of individual that you are. It's probably more important. I think being a minister is just like being in any other job, I suppose. You pick it up as you go along, and if you've served in quite a lot of roles across government, actually there's lots of things which will demonstrate that you can do that kind of work. But Timwald at its most basic is a consensus chamber. You know, you can't do anything by yourself, so everything you're trying to achieve involves bringing people with you, involves getting support and whatever else needs to be done to achieve the policy aims you've set out for yourself and for others. So I think anyone who's spent time in that chamber, if you're half good at your job, you'll have the skills you need to bring people with you to build that consensus, to develop policy. If you're not very good at your job, that's a whole separate conversation, I suppose. But I don't think it's absolutely necessary that you've held that ministerial position beforehand. Just like I would have said, there are some people that have been elected to the House Keys this time around who've never been in a government department, but I think would make very good ministers.
Because it is fair to say, I think, that every chief minister we've had, apart from Miles Walker when he was initially made chief minister, every other chief minister has been a minister before taking on the role of chief minister. Some would argue that that's an essential element of your training so that you can then manage to be chief minister. Others would argue that perhaps, well, we've had the same government for the last 20 years because of that. Is that a fair thing to say?
I think it's hard to break some of the cycles if you are just electing the same people. So my one concern would be that if you've got two ex-ministers or ministers going for the job now, they're going to have to find a way of explaining some of their previous policy decisions. And I think it's difficult to read some of the stuff that's in those manifestos when you know the decisions that this Council of Ministers has made over the last 5 years. And now you've got members of that Council of Ministers talking in terms of, you know, protecting working families when it was this Council of Ministers that made significant changes to EPA and this Council of Ministers that made significant changes to housing rules and public sector housing. And yet you've now got a candidate saying, no, that's not me. I believe in other things. And you think, well, where were you over the last 5 years then, if this is what you believe and this is who you are? And I think that is, to some extent, why you do get a similar government following a similar government, because actually what you're electing is people that were in post for that 5 years. And so instead of getting more kind of radical change, you end up with a more gradual process as people do change gradually over time, rather than saying, actually, that approach of the last 5 years wasn't great, we need a new approach. And so in some respects, I can understand both sides of the argument you've just put, and I think both perspectives are quite valid.
One of the challenges, I suspect, for people when it came to the last election, particularly in relation to your party, really got into the Liberal Venon performance at the last election as yet on agenda. There was a view that Liberal Venon kind of appeared to be all things to all people. It was a very open party that seemed to have your views, which perhaps could be described as centre-left, together with some views that would have been reasonably described as very much on the right of Manx politics. where is Liberal Fannin? What is Liberal Fannin in terms of...
Generally, we're a centrist party, which means you are going to have people on both sides of that centre, which is why, like I said earlier, I'm quite comfortable with both of these candidates in terms of their political positions, because actually it's about more about the individual, I think, sometimes. But you get some parties that are quite cohesive around their particular ideology, so you've got your left-wingers and your right-wingers, but actually as a party, we don't fit neatly into that mould, because I think Manx people have shown over the years that the Isle of Man doesn't fit neatly into that mould either, and different constituencies definitely have different outlooks and different perspectives and different priorities, which I think is only fair. That's why the Manx public keep returning independent candidates time and time again. And I think as a party, we try to reflect that and say, actually, you've got candidates in your area that reflect your area, that reflect the communities that they are asking to serve, which means naturally their views are going to differ on some things. But generally, we all kind of cased around a single central policy agenda and a single set of core principles, all of our candidates signed up to. And really, it is those kind of centrist principles, those liberal principles that we had, that we stuck to. That's exactly where we see ourselves, I think, as a party, is actually we like to form that consensus and find that middle ground that actually delivers on something. Quite often people call it common sense politics. Actually, that's kind of where we stand. And sometimes common sense means you're a bit on the left, and sometimes it means you're a bit on the right, depending on the issue that you're talking about.
So generally... was it a good election for Liberal Fannin? I mean, obviously, I kind of know the answer to that question because you've only got one candidate elected. So it's probably not as good a result as you might have hoped for. But were there positives and negatives?
It was an interesting one. So I think we got across the island about 3,500 votes or something, give or take, which I think was more votes than any other of the parties. And we ended up with one seat. You had the Green Party, I think, got around 2,000 votes on the island and didn't get any seats. And you think, actually, is that a reflection perhaps of our small constituency size? Is it a reflection of the votes that people needed to get elected? I mean, you had politicians getting elected with 700 votes in some constituencies, and in other constituencies it takes 1,600 to get over that finishing line. And so really the Manx political landscape is a difficult one to read sometimes, I think. So yes, would I have preferred to have more Liberal Fannin candidates elected? Absolutely I would. Am I pleased that we have actually two Labour Party candidates? Absolutely. I think more party politics is definitely the only way of making things like this Chief Minister election, for example, more accessible to the public. And that's possibly why a significant portion of your listeners are the ones saying, actually, we don't want either of those candidates. We'd prefer to have a say in who our chief minister is going to be. And the only effective way you can do that in a parliamentary democracy is to have party structures, so people know what they're getting at the outset when they cast their vote at the ballot box.
You're listening to MHK's Rob Collister and Laurie Hooper. Is it the only way that you can deliver that, or are there other ways in which you can get the public engaged in voting for Chief Minister's role?
I think as we go into this five-year period, I think communication's key. I think whoever the next Chief Minister is, they've got to break that change of the same happening again and again. As Laurie's just said there, you elect a Chief Minister and the same Council of Ministers seems to deliver the same message every 5 years. We've got to break that chain. Communication, I think, will be at the heart of this, the key of how they deliver those really difficult messages. I think interesting that both candidates in their manifestos are asking for the Council of Ministers and for Tynwald to be more open, more transparent, especially around policy and having more debates. It'll be interesting to see if either of those Chief Minister candidates can actually deliver that, because a lot of it does circle around collective responsibility. We understand that government has to deliver some very key initiatives and some key projects and agendas. But realistically, it does need to be loosened, that collective responsibility. And as I say, the first test will come with the Manx Gas vote. I personally feel that should be an open vote, whoever's in the Council of Ministers on the time, because it's a difficult one. Public are saying no, we need to look at options. It's going to be incredibly difficult, but open, honest, transparent, and explaining those difficult decisions, listening to constituents. And I think it even comes down to something as a consultation. If you have a consultation on something and 60% of the public decide that they want this direction, why are we not listening to that? Why do we just ignore it? Bring the people with you. Bring those the public and the people who are taking the time to engage, listen to their views and incorporate them into our strategies and our policies over the next 5 years.
Is it possible to get to the end of a five-year term and for the public not to say This is the worst government we've ever had. Because every time they do say this. And does that not perhaps describe that there is, you know, that there is a fundamental breakage somewhere in our democratic system that needs to be addressed in some way? Laurie, have you got any thoughts?
I think it must be possible to get to the end of 5 years without feeling that. I don't think we'd, either of us would be sitting here doing this job if we didn't think it was possible to come out the other side thinking we can make a difference and things can change. But it's an interesting one. Why do people get so disillusioned with government over the 5 years? And I think partly it's because we have that 5-year cycle. And so what you see is in the first year or two, lots of stuff gets done because, you know, there's no risk there in the first year or two. But in the last year or two, actually, council ministers and politicians start getting a bit more nervous because now they're up for re-election. And then it all starts to become about what they themselves can do and have done so they can get re-elected. It's why you see, I think, council take a lot fewer risks, perhaps in the last year. And the reality is people's memories are quite short. So you won't often remember what happened in the first 12 months of an administration, but you'll definitely remember what happened the week before the election. And I think that's part of the issue, is by the time you get round to it, to an election, you'll have had a year or 2 years of government, you know, pushing issues back, kicking them down the road, fudging things a bit. And that's what you then remember when it comes to election time, is, well, actually, we've had a year or two of that kind of dithering and dallying around. Whereas, actually, if you take a look back, maybe the first year could have been fantastic. And I think that's what you need to break, is you need to get people elected who actually aren't looking for the next election. What they're looking for is, let's do the best we can. And when the election comes around, we'll stand up and say, we did the best we can. But I think that again, to my mind, is much harder to do when you have independent politicians, because independent politicians, by its very nature, they are only out for themselves. In the broadest sense of the word, I'm not trying to imply that they are, you know, not out to serve the public, but ultimately, you know, what gets them re-elected is what they're going to be focused on. And I think that is, again, it's an inherent weakness in our system.
But again,
I think we'll see it again.
But I think everyone who comes into politics comes in for genuinely the right reason. They want to make changes and they want to do the very best. The problem is, you know, if you take the last administration, it's gone through some amazing difficulties. You know, you talk Brexit to start with. We thought that was going to be the biggest problem. Then suddenly we had COVID. And if you actually look at that, I was quite shocked when I went and knocked on doors, and I had it several times where people said this was the worst government we've ever seen. And it was a shock for me to hear that, because I've been on the coalface for the last 5 years. I've seen the work that's been done to protect thousands of jobs, to make sure that people had jobs to go back to when we dealt with COVID. And that was only done through cross-government working. And if nothing else, it has told us that government can work differently than it's done in the past. And the next administration, when we tackle some of the big things about climate change, the economy, housing, we need to go right across government again, walk in. Like Laurie and I were very fortunate that we went down to the palace when we knew COVID was breaking, and there was a white flipboard, and the officers were there, and the political members there, and they said, right, we're about to lose thousands of businesses here, we're about to lose thousands of jobs here. What can we do to protect them as fast as we can to make sure that those jobs, anyone's being furloughed, anyone being made redundant, has got an avenue to come back to? And it was fascinating working with the Treasury Minister and other, and with Lawrence Skelly, who was the DfE Minister at the time. And from that, we came up with MIRA, salary support, which did protect jobs and protect businesses. And now, when you look back, that most of those people have gone back to those jobs. It could have been a different picture if government had, you know, had not been so forethinking about what was about to come down the line to affect those businesses and those individuals.
Knowing how difficult it is to get government departments to work together, I was genuinely impressed with the way things worked out.
But if that's the case then, Phil, if the case of government did such a great job, which I think it did as well for COVID-19, how did six ministers potentially lose their seat at the ballot box? I know a couple stepped down, one was elected to president and one, you know, said it wasn't, but there was pretty much the whole of the Council of Ministers, except for David Ashford, who topped his poll, Alf Canada topped his, but if you take Alex Allinson, 50% of his vote gone. So there was obviously a message, it almost did have that Winston Churchill feel, get through the war and then we'll clean everything out when you've finished the job. It was fascinating to watch that, and as an elected member myself, I found it incredibly difficult on election night, seeing these results coming in, people you worked very closely with for 5 years suddenly losing their seat.
It must be quite tough for a serving chief minister who sees two of his colleagues, two people he's worked very closely with, writing some fairly uncharitable things in their manifesto. It must be quite difficult for Howard Quayle reading the two chief ministerial statements.
But surely that's the case. It's a lot of the time everybody does have a slightly different angle or a different vision. And when you look at these two manifestos, they say they're two very strong candidates, but they're both painting a very different vision or direction where the island should take. One focuses, as you say, a little bit more on teamwork, bringing in experts. The other one's saying, I'll deliver this, I will make sure this happens. And that's quite interesting to see the contrast on those two personalities in many ways.
But I think you're right, though. It's back to what I was saying before. It's a bit bizarre that you've got people that have been in the Council of Ministers for 5 years, say, saying in their manifesto, well, actually, the Chief Minister is only a first among equals. He doesn't have the power to crack the whip. But if I'd been in charge, it would have been different. Well, actually, how? You're telling us that actually the current Chief Minister doesn't have the powers that we think he does, but you're saying if you'd have been in that role, somehow you'd have done things differently, when actually we haven't seen different things happen over the last 5 years. You've seen those decisions get made in the same way as always, and behind closed doors, and not a great deal of openness and transparency sometimes. And so it is quite interesting to again see in black and white. I think there's a little bit of rewriting of history going on, if I'm honest, with both of those manifestos, trying to pitch something that perhaps is maybe an idealised vision of how things work. But in reality, I think we all know it's not quite as black and white as that. And whilst they will clearly do things differently, and they will have a different approach to each other and to the current Chief Minister, perhaps it won't be quite as radical a departure as we're being sold, I suppose, in the manifestos.
So I mean, Rob has been clear. Rob is going with Alf. You've been a little bit more vague on this, Laurie. But I'm guessing, actually, just maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm getting the feeling that maybe you're probably going more for none of the above.
I'm undecided as yet. So for me, I've seen the manifestos, and that's great. But there's lots of things missing in both of them. So, for example, Alf doesn't talk about mental health issues at all. Mental health came up as a big issue in Ramsey, on the doorstep, and in the hustings we had. And so, for it not to be even acknowledged as a key challenge the island is facing, it was a bit of a surprise to me. So I'd like to ask, actually, why is that not there, and what are his thoughts on that? So for me, I think I need to wait for the hustings and actually ask both the candidates about some of the decisions they've made over the last few years and say, well, actually, do you stand by that decision? Is that a decision you believe in? And equally, these things that are perhaps missing in each of your manifestos, why are they missing, and what are your thoughts? Because obviously you can't include everything in a manifesto. I'm more than happy to accept that it was just, it's not there because I was talking about everything else. That's fine. But equally, I would like to see, I think that the one difference that struck me from the two manifestos is the one from Alex is much more, it's got more specifics in it, I think, whereas Alf is talking much more in generalities. And so, to my mind, they do indicate two different approaches. And so the question for Alex, I think, is going to have to be, well, actually, how flexible are you on some of these specifics? And for Alf, it's thanks for the general statement, but actually, what is it you're trying to achieve here? Because just saying things like we need to fix the NHS, that's a great statement, but it's got to have something behind it, not just a bland kind of platitude. So both of them, I think, have got a bit of ground to make up from my perspective.
I think it's fascinating. Laurie has accused me over the last 5 years of sitting firmly on the fence, and I'm in the studio with you this afternoon, and Laurie is sitting on the fence, and I'm being very clear with my sort of direction of where I'm going to be voting. I think it's fantastic. But almost a reverse role in many ways.
Well, Rob, it's been 5 years. It had to happen at some point. I'm amazed you managed to run to canvas all of Onken with that fence post stuff.
Steady now, come on. We were doing so well. I'm asking two or three key things that you would hope to have achieved and that you would hope to be held to account for by the public coming
housing,
election.
Housing for me, straight away, we've got to sort out the issue of housing, and that opens up a lot of different avenues that we've got to explore. I think also education, as I say, I'm a massive fan of lifelong learning. I think the other thing as well is health, and we've got to start the climate journey. So at the end of this administration, we need to address, as I say, housing.
Look at the things that I said we need to progress on, and actually I think you make progress in all these areas, and I'd be happy to take some progress across the board rather than saying, actually, I fixed one problem and I didn't touch the rest of them because I spent all my time on that one. I think the reality is you'll make more progress if you try and spread yourself around a bit and actually push everything a little bit forwards.
That was seasoned MHK's Rob Collister and Laurie Hooper. Who's sitting on the fence now, then?